Nuketown Radioactive for November 9th, 2005. Folks, welcome to Radioactive. It has been a damn long time since one of these podcasts has gone out. And, it's nice to actually be recording again. It's nice to have a computer to record on again. It's just nice to not actually have to be troubleshooting an unending litany of computer problems. But more on that in a little bit. The opening theme, if you didn't recognize it, was the theme from Robotech, which I think I watched that series in like 1987 or something like that when I was like a freshman in high school, or I think it was the summer between my 8th grade year and my 9th grade year of secondary education. Anyway, I freaking loved it. I remember running my paper route and biking my paper route, delivering everything, and just making sure that I got back in time to watch Robotech. For me, Robotech was just pretty much one of the ultimate comics or cartoon series, because it had everything I loved about Star Blazers, the whole kind of space opera thing going for it. But at the same time, it had more adult themes. It was much more mature than Star Blazers had been. And man, what a great freaking show. So I figured, since I still don't have a theme song, I might as well just use the Robotech one, right? Now, as far as the month of hell goes, which would be the explanation as to why the heck Radioactive hasn't been out after, and I was doing really good, I was getting it out every 2 weeks. But alas, we had the month of hell. It started off, the main crux of the month of hell involved the failure of two of the computers around the house. My Power Mac, which is what I do everything on, most of my real work on, it's certainly what I record Radioactive on, my campaign stuff for D&D, my freelance writing, pretty much anything I do it on my Power Mac. Its hard drive died. Its hard drive was in the its hard drive was actively dying. So I had to spend a couple days on support with on the phone with Apple support figuring that out. I also ended up having to spend an equal amount of time, so another probably almost a week, working on my wife's Vio laptop from Sony. Unfortunately, it was having all sorts of weird problems where it would just spontaneously crash and freeze up the screen, or it would just kind of drop into hibernation mode and not wake up again. So again, you kind of have a feeling for what the problem is, that it's not a hardware issue, that it's not a software issue. I mean, I don't have viruses or spyware or anything on these machines, but you have to prove it to the customer support people. So I ended up spending probably about 2 weeks straight ultimately dealing with these issues, on the phone with tech support every other night, backing up all my data, because fortunately I didn't lose anything through any of this. I backed up the Power Mac. I got all of its data off, and let me tell you, folks, one thing I have learned from this is that it is worth it to have a freaking FireWire drive or a USB 2 drive that you can easily back your data up to. Because I was burning to DVD, and let me tell you, when you've got like 40 or 50 gig worth of data, it takes forever and a day to back up your data. I mean, hell, two of those nights, right, when I could have been, you know, packing off the Power Mac to get fixed, I was instead spending it burning DVDs, which is, you know, just atrociously boring. So anyway, I am now in the market for a dual USB / FireWire hard drive, external hard drive. I've got some in mind, but I would definitely, you know, if you're a creative professional, if you rely on your computer for everything the way I do, you know, just I think it's worth it. It's worth your time to spend the $150 or whatever to get a nice 250 meg hard drive that you can back things up to. Now, I have some good news. The first thing I just want to address real quick is I think in the last Radioactive I had talked about the Finding Serenity contest. Basically, it was giving away a copy of a book that's a collection of nonfiction essays on the Firefly series by Joss Whedon. So I have a winner for that. We got a couple of contest entries, and the winner was Kevin Smith from Albany, New York, who has been listening to the podcast for quite a long time. Actually, he remembered me reviewing the book back in, I guess it was March or April when the podcast first started, when I had just begun procrastinating writing the review for it. So, Kevin, thanks for bearing with me, man. I've already notified him about this like 3 weeks ago, but unfortunately then, you know, all of the computer nightmares happened, and I didn't really have enough time left over to get to the post office. But now that things are looking up, I will definitely get it in the mail to him. The other big news, kind of reality-altering big news, is that I'm going to be a dad again. Sue's pregnant, and she's due June 10th, which, you know, just freaking rocks. We're really excited about that. you know, it's wow. You know, I'm just, even now, I mean, I've known about it for, well, almost a month, because I think I found out just as all the computers were actively crashing. You know, I'm still just wow. You know, this is the second time around. We have a daughter, 2.5, named Jordan, and it's, you know, it's kind of, I think one of the things that just strikes me about it this time is I don't feel quite as nervous as I did the first time. I mean, I know that baby number two will undoubtedly be different in a lot of ways from baby number one, but, you know, it's, as having already been a dad, you know, gone through the dad thing once, I'm a little less nervous about things like, oh, I don't know, holding the baby, feeding the baby, changing the baby, washing the baby, you know, doing all of these things that, you know, as guys, we don't necessarily have a lot of time or a lot of experience doing, you know. I mean, it's, I babysat as a kid, but, you know, it's still, I think I talked about one of the earlier podcasts, you know, it's just not something that you really have a lot of experience to until it's your own kid. So, really excited about that. Not a heck of a lot to talk about just yet. You know, we're still early on. But, you know, that has certainly factored into the delay in getting Radioactive up. I mean, the one big change so far this time is Sue has had a lot more of the morning sickness kind of symptoms, although most of them don't happen in the morning. She's just been kind of on and off nauseous through the day, gets tired a lot quicker. You know, and with a 2.5-year-old around, sometimes I just have to come home and I take care of Jordan instead of, say, running upstairs and recording a podcast for you all. So, just great news, guys. I'm just completely and utterly flabbergasted. It's just freaking awesome. Now, this is going to be a shorter podcast. I'm actually going to be copping out a bit. I'm not doing the book review. I'm not doing Sites of Note this time around. I am, however, going to be giving you a review of The Dungeon Master's Guide 2, which I will say I actually recorded like a month ago when I was going to knock out number 19 real quick. But alas, it kind of sat and languished on a backup DVD until, you know, I got the Power Mac back and everything was up and running again. So you will have the DMG2 review here. I apologize to the non-gamers. I know not everybody who listens to the podcast is a gamer, but I think that one of the cool things about DMG2, and I'll get into this in the review, is that it is actually useful for non-gamers or more casual gamers, you know, because it gets into the kind of world creation, some plot stuff, and all in all, I think it's a pretty useful book. But like I say, We'll talk about that more in the review. Next podcast should be out pretty quick. I'm hoping to get one out maybe this weekend. But we'll see exactly how it goes. I don't want to hold myself to anything just yet since things are still somewhat chaotic and I have a few lingering technical problems to deal with, namely the fact that my Netgear wireless router kind of, I don't know what the hell its problem was, but it just kind of died. The signal was getting all wonky and changing channels didn't really solve it, so I swapped that out, put an Airport Express in. Good news is Airport Express working like a charm, faster than the old one because it's a G instead of a B for Wi-Fi, but the downside of that is that all the computers and wireless stuff has to be converted over to using the Airport thing, which, you know, it's just... it's never simple, right? So, at least it's not simple when you have to deal with the PCs. The Macs just love the Airport Express. But, I think I've digressed enough. I will talk to you all soon. Until then, I'm just going to ramble on endlessly here. Enjoy the review.
A wizard is never late, Frodo Baggins. Nor is he early. He arrives precisely when he means to.
I think that quote applies equally well to Dungeon Masters, don't you think? At least the sentiment does. I used to have this great bumper sticker for my car that said, the DM is always right. Cruel, sadistic, and evil, but always right. And that brings me to the subject of the next segment, which is a review of Dungeon Master's Guide 2 by Wizards of the Coast. It's 288 pages. It was contributed to by Jesse Decker, David Noonan, Chris Thomason, James Jacobs, and Robin D. Laws. And I gotta admit, when I first saw this book, when I first saw the promos for this book, I thought, oh my god, here is Wizards of the Coast attempting to once again separate us from our money with some cheesy, unneeded product that, you know, just kind of tries to play on the success of the original Dungeon Master's Guide name. But, and actually, you know, I read some early reviews of it, and they tended to dismiss it as kind of an overly fluffy, newbie-oriented book that wasn't really all that useful for veteran DMs. Now, I had a chance to borrow it from a friend of mine who's in my campaign, who's also one of our DMs. My group is blessed with numerous DMs, and I've had a chance to read through it, and I gotta say, I'm gonna be buying it. I think it's a good book. While it does dedicate its early chapter, approximately the first 36 pages, to organizing and running a campaign, and just kind of themes on how to do that, how to create a campaign world, how to keep your campaign on track, that kind of thing, I don't think this information is really solely for new game masters. I mean, personally, I find value in this and other books that discuss the theory of DMing and which, you know, discuss different approaches to it. Because, I mean, the thing is, you know, as a DM, I think, at least I know I do, we have a tendency to just kind of focus on the game, getting ready for the next game. I mean, if you're like me and you've got a weekly game, you know, there could be a lot of pressure on you just to get everything done. In fact, you know, while I'm recording this podcast, I really should be working on tomorrow's game. But anyway, we don't necessarily take enough time to just kind of sit back and reflect on what we do and how we do it and ways that we might be able to improve it. And I think that's where the first chapter of this book really comes into play and where it is useful, even for veteran DMs, to just kind of sit down, take a minute, and think, which is exactly the sort of thing that this book promotes. Now, once you get through that chapter, you start to get into some meatier stuff. And actually, that chapter has a couple of other things that I wanted to mention. One thing I wanted to mention. It has a couple of little tips scattered through it, and one of the things I really liked was basically a page or two that it dedicated to shorthand for maps, basically talking about how to draw better terrain on your battle maps, and it gave you a couple of different tips on how to do that, how to show elevations, how to show depths of water, and I thought, you know, that's something that really has value to me as a DM, because really, you know, who really has spent that much time thinking about how you draw the battle map? And this is an example of, you know, taking a step back, looking and say, hey, you know what? That does make sense. That is a better way of doing it. Now, a good deal of book is based on world building, and this is where I found it to be most useful. But first off, we've got a couple of archetypal locations, and they have special rules for flooding dungeons, battles in the sky, chases and mobs, and I thought that was pretty cool because the rules are different from what you would see from just like a normal D&D combat kind of thing. It gives it more of an epic feel, and it allows you to create situations that are more than just, you know, a round robin hack and slash. It also has new encounter tables for different locations, sewers and such. I really should have specified exactly what they were, but there were new encounter tables. And personally, I am always in favor of more encounter tables. There's also some pretty cool rules. Rules for creating guilds. Rules for being an apprentice, both an apprentice wizard, an apprentice guildsman. An apprentice crafter, those kind of things. And basically they give you minor bonuses to your character for taking an apprentice feat, and then once you get enough levels, you can actually take the master feat, which allows you to gain an apprentice of your own, which I thought was kind of cool. You know, it's something different from what your normal D&D game. And for me, it was particularly appropriate because I am running an urban campaign right now, an urban fantasy campaign set in the world of Greyhawk, and these kinds of things are what kind of separate, a city campaign from a typical D&D campaign. Because in a city campaign, you actually have time for characters to have things like masters, having someone teaching them a skill, and here in this book, I found rules exactly for the kind of thing I'd want to be able to do. There are rules on kind of creating a guild, advice on how to do it, a guild feat that gives you certain bonuses for being a member of the guild. It's got some abstract city law rules, which was pretty cool. I thought it's useful for just kind of like resolving it. It asks you to basically determine how lawful the city is, and then it attempts to basically give you a dice mechanic for resolving a criminal case, which I don't have that issue with this particular campaign, because the guys in my campaign tend to be very lawful and good right now, which is a completely unlike their previous incarnation as the chaotic crazy Black Razors. But inevitably in any campaign, I think you run into a situation where you're going to have the adventurers either break a law or get framed for breaking a law or whatever. And this provides you with a mechanic for resolving it. I think the way that I would use this is look at these different bonuses and basically gives you a target number, and then you roll it. And then if you get higher than that, then the case is resolved in the plaintiff's favor, and if you roll lower than that, it's resolved in the defendant's favor. Or basically, not exactly like that. It's actually resolved in terms... It's resolved lawfully, so the right person wins. But anyway, I think it provides you with a good mechanic, and then you can modify it based on, maybe the arguments that the PCs make, advice or evidence that they enter into the trial, that sort of thing. So I thought that was cool. There's also rules for, not exactly rules, but descriptions of medieval life, inns, taverns, other areas that the party is likely to encounter. And I think, again, running an urban campaign, this was great for me. There's a couple of 50 of this, 100 of that, like 100 instant NPC agendas, which, for my money, you can never have enough of that kind of stuff. I love being able to have a book like the DMG, or in this case, the DMG 2, where you can just open it and run with it. You can open it and say, okay, yeah, the PCs have surprised me, which in Dark City campaign, which is my D&D campaign, happens more often than not. You whip this out and boom, you're ready to go. So I thought that was really cool. The other thing that's really nice about this book is that it gives you a fully detailed city, which is the town of Saltmarsh, which, being a longtime gamer, I appreciated the fact that they actually pulled something from D&D's history as opposed to just creating some new generic fantasy town. It was much cooler to actually have a town that, we've all heard about, or at least those of us who've been playing for a long time have heard about. And I think the cool thing about this town, I might never actually use this town in my campaign, but I think when you're looking for ideas for fleshing out your city, or if you're looking to try, it's great to have that example. It's great to be able to look at what someone else has done and say, oh yeah, I forgot to include that kind of an NPC. Or, gee, I wonder what somebody else would have done for the city guard? You know, what's appropriate level for city guard of a town of this size? That sort of thing. So I definitely liked that. The NPCs were pretty cool. There's rules on gaining contact, hirelings. There's also unique abilities for NPCs. So, you know, if you wanted to give them an extra limb or certain creepy aspects, you could do that, which I thought was kind of cool because, you know, one of the things that kind of bugs me about D20 is that so much of it, is mechanic based, and everything ends up, as a result, kind of ends up being kind of generic. You know, it's a generic plus one sword with a flaming ability, or, you know, that sort of thing. And this gives you a chance to introduce NPCs that are a little different from what the PCs might normally encounter. There are a whole bunch of magic items. and again, one of my complaints about D&D, especially the 3.0, 3.5 magic items, is they do tend to be so generic. It's like insert attribute A into slot B, and there you go. It's great for PCs being able to create magic items because there are standardized rules for generating effects, but, you know, as a DM, you know, I don't know, you don't tend to get those kind of unique magic items that you might really like. Where that's where the DMG helps, the DMG 2 helps. And introduces signature traits, which are minor effects, like, say, a blade always being sheathed in mist when it's drawn, or having animated etchings dance along its blade. These have absolutely no effect on gameplay, but they look cool, and I think as a player and as a DM, it's cool to be able to have a character that can take the... can craft weapons with these kinds of traits. You know, and this isn't, of course, this is something that you could have easily thought up on your own, but again, it's fuel for thought. And it's cool to actually have, you know, a game mechanic to back it up. They also have bonded magic items, which I thought was a really nice idea, which basically you have, let's say you have your fighter with your stereotypical fighter, right? And, a Conan-esque type figure. And he's got this sword, and he does amazing epic things with this sword. But, you know, then he finds the plus two longsword, and he ditches his sword in favor of this new thing. That's always kind of bothered me. And I think the bonded items provide you with an opportunity to change that. And basically what it allows you to do is complete some feat or trial, ritual, whatever. And after completing this ritual, your weapon becomes a magic item, and as you level up, you can grant additional abilities to this item. So it gives you the opportunity to create that, let's say, like that epic paladin with his noble sword, you know, and over time, he gains in power, and some of that epic nature rubs off on his weapon, and this weapon becomes as famous as he does. And I think that's pretty cool, because that's the kind of stuff that I've always done in my campaign. It's certainly something that I did under 2nd edition. We had some really great weapons in 2nd edition that I created. And, you know, I think this provides with the players with a mechanic that if they want to be able to do that sort of thing, they can. And it gives the DM a way of facilitating that. Another cool thing is... magical locations, which basically they're kind of like a magic item that's attached to a place. So the idea being that players can visit this place, they gain certain magical abilities, like they would if they had found a ring or something, but they're tied to the specific location. So, you know, they could gain, say, you know, a plus two bonus to an ability score, or something along those lines, or, you know, a plus two luck bonus. Sorry, excuse me, a plus two luck bonus or something along those lines. And I thought, you know, it's a nice idea. You know, it's something different. I mean, it's certainly something we've used in our campaign. Obviously, without actual specific rules for it. And actually, when we used it in our campaign, it did cause some small amount of controversy because it was, in my opinion, just a little powerful. So again, nice, a cool idea. Something I think a lot of DMs do. Nice to be able to actually have hooks that bring it into the regular rules. So, as far as the book goes, I definitely think it's worth picking up. I mean, is it a must buy? No, not really. I mean, if you're a DM and there's other books that might be better suited for your campaign, you know, pick those up. But, you know, if you're a DM who's looking for new ideas, you're looking to do a little something different, you'd like to be able to have that kind of like mental refresher of sitting down and kind of reading through different ideas on how to run a campaign, then I definitely recommend picking it up. It's definitely not a bad purchase. And I think it's a pretty good book. as far as drawbacks go, I don't know if I could really give any. I mean, I think I would have liked to have seen more of the advice, maybe more different opinions there. I would have loved to have seen, you know, maybe some more random charts, that sort of thing. But overall, it's a pretty decent book. I think it's worth the money, and I know I'm definitely planning on getting it. And, you know, that isn't always the case when I borrow my friend's D&D books to have a look over. So overall, I think I'd give it an 8 out of 10, maybe 8.5 out of 10. It's definitely a very strong B book. So if nothing else, I would definitely recommend, you know, picking it up the next time you go to a game store, flipping through it, and seeing if it is something that you would be able to use in your campaign. And if you're running an urban campaign, folks, you know, I would just say, yeah, go get it, because I think it's going to be something that will be at my side regularly over the next year or so as we proceed through Dark City. So that'll about do it for Radioactive number 19. As always, you can contact me via email at nuketown@gmail.com. I'm available at Skype. Username's Nuketown, and you've got the Nuketown forums, which you can check out at www.nuketown.com/forum. You can also check out the forums at Science Fiction Podcast Network at tsfpn.com. They have a link to the forums directly from their homepage. And like I say, that should be about it for now. It's been a real pleasure to just kind of get the whole podcasting thing going again. I really missed it. And I am looking forward to getting back on a regular schedule. So until then, folks, I'll talk to you later.
This show is part of the Out of This World Entertainment on the Sci-Fi Podcast Network, tsfpn.com.